the better version. So in terms of the content of the Limud, so we're learning Masechas Gittin. I assume that everybody knows that. But in terms of the content, you could think of the Limud as encompassing four different areas in terms of what I want to cover. We'll have to figure out how much time we're going to allocate to each of these areas. But you could think of the Limud as, number one, encompassing the fundamentals or the fundamental principles of Gerushin, the Yesodos of divorce. And by that, you could think about topics like, when is it permissible to get divorced? Is there some halachic presumption that it's bad? It's a bad thing to get divorced, right? That seemed to be the one of the common themes in the Sichot and the Beis Medrash earlier. What is Gerushin? What is divorce in the Torah's conception? Like, why does it even exist? How do you get divorced? What role does an institution like Beis Din or a Jewish community have in overseeing the divorces within its jurisdiction? What does the Torah's conception of divorce tell us about its conception of marriage? Okay, so these are just types of fundamental questions about the nature of divorce in the Torah and Jewish law and the philosophy of halacha. So questions like those will fall under the discussion of the fundamentals of Gerushin and halacha. And I think that's what I want our main focus to be this year. Part of that could be questions like Afkinu Rabbanan LeKiddushin Mineh, right? When could you uproot a marriage or end a marriage without a divorce or death? Okay, but these are just examples of the types of topics, but do you all get a sense of what I mean? Like, there are some fundamental principles that animate the discussion of divorce. These concepts are more privileged or more fundamental than other concepts in the Masechta that we'll encounter. The second category of topics that we'll meet this year are halachos associated with divorce, but not necessarily fundamental ones, but sometimes practical ones. Dinim that come along as part of the rules of getting divorced. Anybody know examples of this type? So we'll see there are all these rules about how to write a get. What type of consent do you need? What type of names have to be written in the get? Why do you have to put names in the get? Putting a location in the get. What could a get be written on? When could a husband challenge the legitimacy of a get? Much of the first parak is about b'fanai neftav, b'fanai neftam, right? To forfend against the husband challenging the validity of a get. So throughout the Masechta, you have many, many dinim associated with Gerushin that I would say are not fundamental to the concept of Gerushin. Many of them are not even doraisa. But we're going to spend some time, we could figure out how much time we want to devote to these questions to nail down those associated halachos of Gerushin. Does that make sense to you guys? Okay. The third major area takes us away from divorce proper. The first two were about Gerushin and Get. The third area comes up throughout the Masechta, but it's less associated with Gerushin. It's part of Masechta's Gittin, but less about divorce. And you have these fundamental topics or principles of shtaros, documents or deeds in halacha, kinyanim, acquisition and ownership in halacha, testimony, edus in halacha, and something that we will look at quite carefully, the idea of dina d'malchus adina, right? The idea that the non-Jewish law of any given jurisdiction bears on the halachicness of some transaction or some halachic kalos. Okay? So these are more choshen mishpat type topics, but and they're fundamental choshen mishpat topics, but they are woven throughout Masechas Gittin. So we're going to encounter a bunch of those throughout the year also. And the fourth area of topics that we're going to encounter are really just random issues that the Gemara brings up along the way in the Shaka Vitaria. They're not fundamental choshen mishpat topics. They're not fundamental to civil law. They're not fundamental to the Gittin. But there's sometimes interesting topics that we may choose to look into with greater detail. So for example, anybody know some of these in the beginning of the first parak, what comes up? I should ask, how many of you have learned Gittin before? Okay. So guys who've learned Gittin, what comes up in the first parak? Some examples, Ariel? Well, that's a Gittin topic, right? So that is about Gittin.
Freeing Avadim. There's a lot of discussion about.
Yeah, Shechur Avadim. I'll say that relates more to like Chush and Mishpat type principles about ownership and acquisitions. That'd be like category three in my view of things. But you have some discussions of, let's say, Sirtud. Anybody catch that in the first parak? About if you write something in Hebrew, do you have to have lines on top? You have a whole discussion of singing, Zimra. Whether it's permissible to sing nowadays. That comes up in the first parak. It's like a nice Zecher L'Churban type discussion. You have a short discussion of Ilvei Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. That comes up in the first parak. So there are these types of topics that come up along the way, and we could decide how much we want to wade into them. So those are the four categories of things we'll encounter. I would say for me, it's very important that we hit one and two to get the fundamental issues of Gerushin, and even many of the dinim of Gerushin, even if they're not fundamental. I think just you learning Gittin this year, it'll be good to walk out knowing what does the get look like, what does the get require. No? So I think that'd be good to know along the way. I want to hit as many as we can of like the fundamental questions of Chush and Mishpat that come along the way, and I leave it to your discretion and our discretion as we go along about how much of these side topics we want to encounter. We're going to have to triage all of these, right? So just bear this in mind about what you want to walk out of the year with, okay? For me, I think we want to hit as many of 1, 2, and 3. Okay. Ned, any issues with that? Sounds like your plan? What?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me say, that's about the content of what we're going to learn in terms of topics. Let me say a little bit about Derech HaLimud, how I hope to engage these topics. So when you think about Derech HaLimud, you can think about it in a lot of different ways. What is it that you're trying to do when you're learning? Romy. What is it that you're trying to do when you're learning?
Do you want me to actually answer that?
If you have an answer, you could actually answer it.
I think you're trying to think about what the core of a particular issue is conceptually.
Looks like you're trying to give the answer that I'm looking for.
No, actually, I'm not.
Okay, that's, we're on the same page here. Yeah, so you
like,
can.
What is a particular? It's very vague. Like, what is something all about?
Yeah, what's it about?
Yeah,
that's great. So, what Romy says, that sound obvious to you guys? Does that sound like a fetish? Sounds, Josh, that is Romy, right? Well,
I think he's right, yeah.
I think he's right. Okay, that's good. So historically, you could think of a Derech HaLimud, like when people are learning, there are lots of different things you could be doing when you're learning. So for a lot of people, for example, it could literally just be about mastering the back and forth of the simple reading of the Shakavatari of the Gemara, right? If Sam Kozlov were here, he would say Shas Yidin. He's like, what are you talking about? But YouTube, Shas Yidin, and then you'll get a sense of what he means. But literally just have literacy of, or like, what does it say on each blot of Gemara? Right? What's, like, no, like, a lot of Daf Yomi learning amounts to that. And you're learning Bikias, maybe that's a good way to learn also. Just to consume as much as you can of the plain meaning of the Gemara. We don't need shir to do that, right? I mean, you could just prepare the back and forth of the Gemara on your own. And besides, if you do that, you may be getting like the Gemara, the meaning of the Gemara according to, let's say, Rashi, but not according to Tosfos, and maybe not according to the Rambam either, right? So you're not going to get a complete picture of even the Gemara itself if you do that. But more importantly, you're not going to get a complete picture of any given topic. You'll get whatever the Gemara is presenting to you, but oftentimes a sugya is not exhausted by the Gemara's treatment of it. Right, the Rishonim oftentimes have a lot to say, and then the later poskim and the tshuvos have a lot to say. Josh, I think you mentioned that you're a Chuvos person.
Why did you?
I say this just to show the, that I did read through the... I didn't read the Kuntres on Pirates yet. But Zacharia is going to read it and give me the Tamsis.
Okay.
That's what he assured me. So I think the Shilos Chuvos, right? A lot of important stuff comes out in Shilos Chuvos. So if you just digest the Gemara at its straightforward meaning, you're not going to get this full picture of any given topic or sugya. Are we in agreement on that? Okay, so you could be doing something else when you're learning, other than the Daf Yomi Shas Yidin approach. Take the Balei Tosfos, for example. What is it the Balei Tosfos are often characterized as doing? Everybody read the Seidel Aderef's depiction of the base medrash of the Re? Yeah, remind me your first name, though.
Ezra. I think they expand the Gemara.
More granular detail. Yeah, Josh.
Raise contradictions throughout Shas and try to resolve them.
Yeah, so the Seidel Aderef has this great depiction of the Re's base medrash where he had like a Talmud, you know this depiction?
I think you mentioned.
Yeah, he's a Talmud, he's a Baki in each Masechta, right? And they get to the topic, and it's like, okay, are there any parallel sugyas here that we have to consider? And they bring the parallel sugyas, they look for contradictions, and then, you know, they figure out what's the way to resolve the contradictions. So some people would characterize the method of Balei Tosfos as you're collating different sugyas, you're seeking contradictions, and then you're offering distinctions or reconciliations to solve those differences, right? Now, that's great. The Balei Tosfos do a very good job at that, and many of the Chachmei Svarad pick up that approach. The goal there, what's the goal of learning if you're doing that? And then
confronted by authoritative texts, you need to figure out how to deal with these contradictions before it's open.
Yeah, to miyashiv stiros, right? To reconcile contradictions. And I think we all agree it's not controversial to say that it's bad for a legal system to have contradictions, right? We agree with this? Right? So it's like, I didn't have to sit through a whole semester of philosophy to know that contradiction's a bad thing. Right?
Yeah, it's not so clear.
Well, it's not so clear, right? Yehuda, right? Yehuda, right? You're also thinking the same thing, right? But we all agree that contradictions are a bad thing, and they need to be solved, right? The system is less coherent the more inconsistencies it has. So you can say the Balei Tosfos are here to undo those knots, right? It makes the system of halacha more coherent the more consistent it is overall. Yeah? So the Marshal has a very nice depiction of what the Balei Tosfos do. He says, oh, they turn Shas into like a smooth surface. Like it had all these like problems, and they kind of brought everything together into a kador effort, like a coherent whole. And that's, I think, as crazy as this sounds, you know, so many shiurim that you attend, you get the sense that like, what's the purpose of the shiur? What's the purpose of the shiur? Well, it could be just like, here, assimilate this information. But sometimes you get this end, you go to like a shir, it's like there to solve a problem, you know? It's like you all get, here's a kasha, and then here's these other kasha, and then the shir, like you solve all the problems. Does this resonate with you guys, or does it sound like I've been making something up? Now, oftentimes you go to, I think like lots of shirim, they're presented as the goal is to like solve these problems.
Right.
And you can say that's congenial to this depiction of the Balei Tosfos. Like you wanna like make halacha, shas, whatever it is, as consistent and coherent overall, right? We're problem solving. No? I think that is a way you could go about learning, and it's definitely the same to get from reading many Achronim and many Balei Tosfos. Daniel, do you have a hand?
No.
Yeah? Who had a hand on this? Seth.
Yeah, and that's also Rambam's.
Reb Chaim presents himself as solving problems, right? So if somebody could say, yeah, the goal of learning is to like miyashe kushios, right? So I think that's another way somebody could think about learning. I think the way I'm going to think about it in shir here is it's very good solving problems could show that an idea has explanatory power, right, or that an idea is correct, but it doesn't seem like the right goal in and of itself. Are you, do you agree? No?
Well, it's like a valid goal, but it has to be the ultimate goal to solve.
But it's a nice thing along the way to accomplish.
Instrumental.
Yeah, Daniel?
Would you say, though, that like these shared that the ultimate goal is going to be not shaped in the shadow out, or can you say, like, you want to undertake this one topic, and this big shadow comes up with it, and so you have to solve this shadow versus to really get an understanding of the topic?
Is that for me, or the straw man that I set out?
The straw man. I feel like it's not so, like, I don't know if anyone, like the goal of the shear is to just,
yeah, maybe to gain better understanding of the right. I'm fine with that. That's fine. But I'm more just kind of painting. I haven't done like the empirical study. It's not really important right now. But oftentimes you get the impression that the goal is to solve problems, right? Somebody else have a hand? No, we're good. Zev, you had a. Maybe later. Okay, so a third thing you could think about in terms of the Kalima is Lasi Ishmael Salih Lihilkasab. Right? To figure out like what is the halakhic conclusion in each case? Like what ought we be doing in any given situation? Right? So Sardi Hoskin, Hidravadya feels very strongly about this, that the goal of learning should be like literally to know what's the halachic correct course of action in any given case. So if you're learning Gittin, the goal is to know like how do you write a get? What should a get look like? Under what conditions does a get valid? Everybody see that picture? So those are three possibilities just to throw out there. Romy, were any of your suggestions those suggestions, or were you saying something different?
I think that's
something
different.
Okay. So I think Romy's right that if you think about conceptualism, then what you're trying to do in learning is to figure out like what are the main principles or what are the main concepts at the heart of any given topic of halakha. What are the main ideas that animate the concept of divorce? Like, what's the Torah's conception of marriage and its dissolution? Right? What is it that makes a get valid? Like, what affects a gerushin? Right? What role do institutions like Batei Din or Eidin have in making these different transactions or events valid, invalid, etc.? Right? So I'm just giving voice to your suggestion that like, that's what we'll be trying to do throughout most of this year in here is to construct or reconstruct the main principles, the main concepts of halakha as they relate to Gerushin, Gittin, and the associated Kosher Mishpat topics that I mentioned earlier in the content of the video. Make sense? Does that sound like a good plan? Yeah. Why is it so hot? Is it hot?
It's hot air conditioning.
Yeah.
It's
the other AC on?
There's heat, no?
No, it's air conditioning. Hey, don't turn it on.
So where do they spend all summer fixing?
What?
Where do they spend all summer fixing? So they just put it on.
Yeah, I don't know. Weren't you here? You weren't here? Zev, you?
Yeah, is that different from, I guess, any of the common mitzvahs sort of?
Yeah. Very different, because Tommy Amitos is bad, this is good.
That makes sense.
Very different, because we're not going to be... Tommy Amitos, we'll see, like, the Chinuch is going to engage in that, some of you saw the Sefer Chinuch already. Here, I'm not interested, it's not like Tommy Amitos. Anybody who doesn't like Tommy Amitos has to distinguish it like Lundis, which is... I guess articulating or defining the core principles of halakha and these underlying reasons. They come close, and sometimes people use the distinction between mipnei ma'amra Torah, which the Gemara itself that uses in some cases like Modamixas and like a Tamiamixas. What exactly the difference is to figure it out. I don't think it's our burden to have to disentangle those.
Right. Is there like a hard line, or it's just there? It's, yeah.
In my opinion, no. But people might feel more strongly about it. Okay, sounds like a good, sounds like a plan. Yeah, okay. So mostly in Shear, we're gonna focus on just trying to figure out the core concepts and principles, as I mentioned. But I think it's also really important to at least have literacy in like the Gemara and the texts of a lot of what we're gonna see. So I'm gonna have there's gonna be a Bikkias component associated with the Limud. I'm gonna enforce it better this year than I did last year.
It was enforced last year.
It was enforced, yeah. I think better the first semester than the second semester. Officially, it was enforced the second semester. I don't think I asked so many Bikkias questions. But I'll be better about it this semester. So the Bikkias component is gonna be A, everyone should just know the Mishnah is Gittin, cold, Balpet. Fine, maybe not about that, but just everyone should know the Mishnayos Gittin really well. I'm going to designate certain dapim. I'm going to designate dapim that I want everyone to cover. So, like, for example, already now, Tzadi, Amid Aleph, Tzadi, Amid Beis. Then when we get to the first parak, I'll just give, like 20 blot or so there. I'll tell you which blot, but you should know, like, the back and forth of Gemara very well. And to complement that, I also want to... So that's like the Rashi, Daf Yomi, Shas Gittin literacy dimension. But then there's also... just to know... If you're learning Gittin, I think it's really helpful to walk out of yeshiva knowing like how do the halachos of divorce work. So I'm going to want everyone to... I'm going to assign certain prakim in the Rambam of Hilchos Geirushin that everyone should know, and Simanim in Shulchan Aruch, Tur Shulchan Aruch, to supplement our Limud. And we'll touch some of this stuff in Shir, but I think this is like a very important basic literacy stuff that everybody ought to know if you're learning Gittin. And it'd be chaval to learn Gittin and not walk out knowing this. Alright? Okay. Romy, are you okay with this? Great. And then in addition to that, of course, so everyone is going to be accountable for whatever makoros we have on the source sheet and we cover in Shear. And it's really important that you walk into Shear having prepared the makoros. That just ups the level of discussion. You should all prepare before Shear, talk it out with each other in this matter. That's crucial for the level of discussion that we're going to have. Okay, I think that's all I have to say. One last point is just last point is that sometimes the way Shear will progress is not as, it's not just going to be like a linear, like day one, we're going to cover material page 1 to 5, and then day 2, page 5 to 10, etc. But sometimes I'm gonna try to fill in the picture a little more. So sometimes we'll just talk about some makoros on day one, and then I want to go deeper into them on day 2, and I'll even add more makoros to the makoros sheet to fill in the discussion. Okay, so you can sometimes think of Shear as you think of it as a canvas. It's not like every day we're gonna move to a different section of the canvas, but sometimes we're gonna try to add more color or depth to something we already started sketching the prior day. Okay. And that's why there's a painting on the... No, I'm kidding. But that's just a helpful way of thinking about the how she will progress sometimes, and that the Makoro sheet will be updated pretty frequently. And it'll change, so... I recommend don't printing it out. Don't print it out, because if you print it out, it'll be different in a few hours, but you should have ongoing access to it. All right, that's my spiel. Any questions or thoughts on that? Sound terrible? Sounds good? Okay. Skaria?
Probably worth mentioning like all the makoros will be on the makoros sheet.
Yeah, all the makoros will be on the makoros sheet.
In full.
What?
In full.
In full, yeah. Sometimes it's good to crack open a safer. Either because you want context
for Makara that I didn't give you,
or because you like seeing how Masada Rav Kook does their layout on the page.
Or footnotes.
So for all those reasons, you might want, like, you may not want to rely on the source sheet, but literally, like, everything that I'm assigning is on the source sheet itself. And if there's some reason why, like, I'll, like, take a photocopy and send it out, so. Also, I'm not going to get too deep into Svarim and stuff like that, but you'll become acquainted with all the Rishonim and Gittin as we get through the limit. Yeah, thanks, Mario. Yeah, Romy.
I think it's also worth saying people should feel encouraged to, like, write some of the group chat, share things they learned, the Makoros they found.
Yeah. You should definitely, if you have, like, good Makoros or a good article that relates to something that we're learning and you want to mention in the WhatsApp or put it on the WhatsApp, that's really great method as well. Some of the best Makoros over the years have come through the WhatsApp. So, yeah, I definitely encourage that. All right? And, you know, help relieve the burden from it just being Ned's burden to find stuff to put on there. Okay, it's not just Ned, just sometimes the bulk of the responsibility seems to fall on that. Yeah.
Also, like, what's, like, how do we do, like, a throne here? Do we do a throne in, like...
We go to where the action is. And actually, oftentimes, the action is in the Achronim. So wherever the action is, that's where we want to be. Wherever the good ideas and the important concepts are. Sometimes it's in the Rishonim, sometimes it's in the Achronim. So we don't discriminate based off someone's date of birth.
No
Meiris.
No?
Meiris. No, we love Meiris. Yeah, we love Meiris. Oftentimes the Rishonim stake out the main concepts and principles, but it's not always the case. Like in many sugyas, we'll see that it's later Achronim. So then we'll go to the Achronim. So, yeah. Any other thoughts or comments? Eitan, looks like you might have something you want to say. You want to know about the canvas picture? You know, it's just like a painting of a get being delivered. I thought it was really good. It was the best piece of art I could find about Gershon. It was either that or an actual get. I think a get's not, it doesn't have as much color. So I went to this. But we'll look at an actual get. We'll talk about how it's written. And that'll be in section 2 when we cover the dinim associated with Gittin. But if you look at the picture, let's see, I don't know if I can't pull it up here, but it's a very nice picture. It's a picture of a Bez Din being Misader Get, and you see the husband on the left side and the wife on the right side. We could darshan the... We'll bring in Meir Soloveitchik. He could darshan the art for us.
Sense. Well, they should do the same thing for
I looked. There were none online. Yeah, there were none online. I've been at a few Gittin where the wife asked, could I take it home with me? And it's so nice, it's so artistic.
I feel like it's in poor taste.
Well, you think so?
Maybe.
Some people think that Iksuva is in poor taste also.
That's true.
Right?
I do too.
Yeah. All right. Okay, any other thoughts or comments on this? Josh?
I was just going to say that on the WhatsApp chat last year, you should put a picture from your trip in Israel.
Yeah, yeah. I hear. If I was really following my minute from last year, I would take a picture from my trip to Utah and put it in there. So maybe I'll do that. But I thought this Gittin one was really nice. It's also the canvas homepage picture, if you saw it.
It doesn't need to be both.
What?
It doesn't need to be both.
Right. So you want it just to be the canvas one?
The Utah
picture. And also, that was the first page of the book.
Right. Right. I guess I should just make sure that the Gittin picture shouldn't be like a family picture with my wife in it. Okay, I'll look for my Utah picture to see if I have a good sunset or something. All right. Great. Should we start learning a little bit? Let's get into the... Let's start the Limud. Just to introduce some of the main concepts in our first sugya. And then we'll get deeper into it next week. Okay, so, by the way, the source sheet is not only linked in the WhatsApp group, it's also on the Canvas homepage. Everybody see that? And on the Canvas homepage, there's also a Zoom link for if we ever have to have Shir on Zoom. There's a link there for the for the Zoom meeting. Okay, let me see if this projector works. Hopefully it does. Great.
Will there be Zoom options?
When?
In general.
Generally not, I think. It's just, where do you have to be? Maybe for UA Town, I'll make an exception. Okay. Let's talk. It's a little distracting. It's hard to manage both of them. But if it's like a compelling circumstance, then we'll...
It's not very
compelling. By your own admission, right?
What?
By your own admission. So maybe don't go. All right. So let's start with the plikin.
I should mention that in addition to the Mishnayos, you should know these three plikin. And maybe five if you can last year Rishasa as part of the
discussion. Okay, so Dharm Chav Dalet Aleph, Rami? Yeah, I'm recording now. So we have three psukim that really introduce the idea of Gershon and the Torah. Volunteer just to get it. Romy, why don't you get us started?
Okay.
Yeah. So what do you get from, like, what's the Torah introducing here?
Somebody getting married and then not liking the person anymore,
right, this is a major machloka, as we already know from the Gemara and Daf Tzadi, right? Right. Is it losim tchim beinav? Is it matzah ba'er vas davar? Right.
And in that case, you'd have to write a sefer pitzus and then give it to her.
Yeah.
And send her away.
Yeah. So there are a few chidushim here. You might say, if you want to figure out what the Torah's innovation. When it comes to like, what's the chiddush here of these psukim, so to speak? So, what would you say? What's the chiddush here at the most basic level? Can you remind me your name?
Tani. First, that divorce is an option.
Yeah, that divorce is an option, right? That there's this concept of gerushin, that marriage is dissolvable, right? It could be broken apart. It could be undone. That's a big deal. It's especially a big deal in light of the fact that the Yushalmi, anybody see the Yushalmi in Kedushin? It's on the source sheet, we'll talk about it later. The Yushalmi seems to hold, at least according to one view, that there's no concept of Gerushin for non-Jews from the Torah's perspective. That's this Yushalmi in the first paragraph of Kedushin. You have it here on page 5.
Is there any concept of Nisuin for non-Jews?
Yeah, Nisuin for sure. That's in that same Yushalmi. But you can see here, Yishalmi has two views, Osha Ein Lahem Gerushin, Osha Shnei Megarshin Zaza. Two views of whether you could have bilateral divorce for non-Jews or no divorce at all. And you have two views in Yishalmi here, two shitos in Yishalmi that uphold the idea that there's no Gerushin for non-Jews. So you can see this. Rabbi Yochanan says, "B'Yisrael nasati gerushin, lo nasati gerushin b'umas olam." And then you have Rav Chananya who says, "Lam nechash lo yichad Hakadosh Baruch Hu shmo begerushin el b'Yisrael b'lavad." We'll come back to Yishalmi more carefully, but yeah, it's a chiddush of the Torah, so to speak, that there's the capacity for divorce. Right? Now you might say, "Is the concept of marriage better off this way, or is it better off the Yushalmi's way for Bnei Noach, that you enter into a marriage, it's meirastich li la'ola, right? It's forever. It's not breakable. So that's something to ponder.
What's
right?
The Garshin said? Is that wording specific to differentiate between some other type of?
Yeah, in Halacha, it's the husband.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk. Like the what? Maker and Dimi Garaisa, the husband could give a get unilaterally.
Sure.
Right. The wife can't just walk away.
Yeah.
But in the Yishalmi's version from Minoch, the wife could just walk away.
Oh, interesting.
That's the second view of the Yishalmi.
Fascinating.
We'll get there. Okay, so that's Chiddush number one, right? The fact that there is a concept of divorce that's brought into clearer relief in virtue of the fact that Nushalmi itself thinks that for B'nai Noach there's no concept of divorce, right? So we shouldn't take that as self-evident. And one thing we want to, one line of thought we want to pick up in our next Vishurim is like, well, how do we make, like, why does the halakha have this conception of divorce? Zev, yes, that does get into Tanya Mitzvah's territory, and the Chinuch himself embraces that, right? And he has some interesting things to say about it. And Josh has some interesting things to say about the Chinuch saying those things about it. Okay. Good. So that's point number one. What's point number two? What else can we take out of this pasuk here? So not just that there is a concept of divorce. Josh? Am I right, Josh?
Yeah. There's some conception of marriage.
Well, yeah, that ki yikach. Okay, that's definitely true. That's more of a Kedushin question for us, right? Yeah, Rami, your first name?
The
process that we require a Sefer Krisos. I take it that those are the two main, those are the two most fundamental points to extract from this book. Not only is there the capacity to dissolve a marriage, but there's the mechanism. The mechanism is that it's done through Sefer Krisos. And that's a chiddush, because it didn't have to be done that way. You could have done a divorce in a million ways. Right? You could... It could have been just pasuk beis, v'yatza miveso. Like, let a divorce be when a couple stops living together. Right? Or let it be when two eidim witness the couple saying, we no longer want to reside together. Right? Here the novelty lies in the specific method for effectuating a divorce. The hainu, sefer krisos. I want to give some thought about the significance of the Sefer Krisos. I don't know if you saw the Sefer Chinuch. Sefer Chinuch has something to say about it. Anybody remember what the Sefer Chinuch says about the significance of Sefer Krisos? It's a quick line. Josh?
That, I mean, I think it's a couple things, but that we don't want them to just immediately get divorced. We want, you know, take some time. If you have an argument, cool down, write it, and you might decide not to approve it.
Yeah, so it's meant to serve as a barrier towards separation, right? Like, it's designed to actually make the process more cumbersome so that it's more difficult to dissolve the union. And that's something I want to give a lot of thought to. We'll see evidence of this in a few places. That maybe part of the significance of the get is the process of... it's very hard. You can't just... Maybe you could, but it's actually... The halakha seems to be designed in a way where it's very difficult to just divorce on your own. You need a schedule with a sofer. You need eidim to be present. You need a mesiras, I guess. Okay? If you've learned... about the end of Babasara. Sorry, are you calling?
No.
Benji's calling. So what's the end of Babasara, Benji? Okay, it's Chaya. Tell Benji what's the end of Babasara.
Yeah, the last paragraph of Babasara, Pasha talks about the idea of get mukushar. Pretty much, these kohanim, they're all means to come up originally for kohanim, who would be very, get angry and quickly write a get and force their wives and then regret it. So they made up this kind of other kind of get where you have to, like, write a few lines, get an aid, sew it up, write another few lines, get another aid, sew it up, and like give the other. So deliberately,
yeah,
you know,
makes it more difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So we should think along these lines for the significance of the Sefer Krisos. Now, there are other dinim associated with the requirement of the Sefer Krisos, the physical get. What else? What's associated with that? Not just the idea of slowing down. What else? Yeah, Daniel?
But also, like, it's a parallel process. You can get engaged for Shtar, so like, it's also kind of similar.
So definitely, yeah, Makesh Avaya Leitzia, right? There is that connection. I know you're thinking about marriage now. Actually, I have to get back to you on something. This whole fight in the hallway over, like, this issue that you asked me to look into. We'll talk. Not for now. Not for now. So let's put the Kedushin side on hold for a second. What else might be associated with Sefer Krisos? Yeah? Remember your first name?
David.
David.
The Nazim Beit Hillel that he has to
Let's just focus on the Saber Krisos component for a second. Right? Not the giving of it.
So, what's the question?
What else? So, one thing is that it slows down. That's a Josh Tanis and Machina.
That, but it also ensures that there's going to be an official record.
Yeah, an official record. Documentation.
Results conflict.
What?
The results conflict.
The results conflict, or any doubt or uncertainty about the status of the marriage, right? So it serves as important evidence. Right, that's... the Chinuch, I think, mentions that. Josh and Rumi, do you recall? No? I think the Chinuch mentions that. Anybody remember if the Chinuch mentions that? I think the Chinuch does mention that. So we'll see that part of the significance of the Sefer Krisos is that it serves as evidence of who's married and who's divorced. Okay? So there's some public knowledge conception that's important. What else might be associated with that? I don't think it appears in the Pesukim directly, but something that's central to many of the sugyas in the beginning of Gittin and later on. At the level of evidence.
I was thinking that there's compensation involved.
Hold off on the compensation. But evidence, the evidence dimensions. Sorry?
That you need Aiden?
Aiden. Okay. Yeah, the requirement of Aiden. That's a huge dimension of effectuating a divorce. You need 2 Aiden to testify about it, to evidence it. There's no such thing as a get done in private. Let me just throw in one other piece to this. It doesn't appear in the Pesukim, but it's mentioned by the Targum. What did the Targum throw in, Ned?
Kadam
Bedina. Targum Yonasan here throws in the requirement of doing this in front of a Bezdin. It's actually not clear anywhere in the Gemara or the Pesukim that a get requires Bezdin to preside over it. Kiddush the Targum Yonasan. You might have a Rashi in Sanhedrin who applies as much also. But that's a very interesting additional requirement. What might that speak to? The requirement of Bezdin to preside over a get. Yeah. My first name again.
So Rav Shechter spoke last night a bit about Bethlehem's Chayiv.
Okay.
And how the Baal, it really has to be wrote to me from the Baal. So I think part of that is that part of this process is also ensuring that and evidence of that, this was something that the Baal signed and wrote up and is given.
So you could have that from Edom, though. You might say evidence is sufficient to have Edom to testify to it, right? So it's not that you need a Bezdin in addition to that. So what else might you say? Ezra?
So it could be that you're saying, so this doesn't work so well, not to cheat a little bit, this doesn't work so well with the first paragraph, then again, it could be saying that get is something that we're so muffed about that we want to make sure, we want to get rid of, within reasonable standards, any possibility of something going wrong in the process, so it needs to be done in court.
Okay, standards. Right. Because it's just for the scrupulousness, right, or the punctiliousness of the process, right? You want it to be without flaw, without any hindrance.
Presumably, we know with Adam too.
Well, we know, because with Adam, you run into issues in terms of Adam. This type of thing does vary a little bit. Adam, it's a little more this type happened versus we can attest that everything was done in the correct way. We can rule that it's done in the correct way.
Okay. I could hear both sides of this. Romy, you wanted to.
I just wondered if the difference between Bezdin and Adam, the higher level or something of Bezdin might relate more to, maybe not higher level, but just the difference. Might relate more to societal order kind of. Consideration that we need to keep track of who is what status and
kind of documents and records type thing, or the idea of there's some communal institution that has to
society. The same, it could really just seem at one point that not the lack of pizzas
philosophy, just like a more centralized organization of the different, like an individual level that can be given, but multiply that times a city and you need some
of it. Yeah. So you could think of that in terms of documents and records, or you could think of that in terms of some central body knowing who's married and who's divorced. You could think of that in terms of kol demikdash adaita derabanan mikdash, right? So you might say that there is a similar point with respect to the gerushin that has to be presided over the communal court, whatever it is here. And also think about it in terms of slowing down the process, right? It's requiring some sort of court appointment also makes the getting divorced more complicated, right? So just bear that in mind as we get through some of these dinim, what role this Kadam Bei Dina plays. Yeah.
And so it's also...
Ryan, your first name again?
David.
Yeah.
More than just like also slowing down the process, I think it has some amount of a chill effect because it's very public forum.
A chilling effect, yeah.
So like if you have, let's say, not such a good reason for getting a divorce, something that was like something you decided, you have to publicly state the reason.
Yeah. It's a good, it's actually, you might even, this Kadam Bei Dina, I like the point you're making very much. You might even say sometimes courts play two different roles. Sometimes courts just play a role of, something you call it a mitza bete, or that you go to the city clerk's office and they give you, let's say, a marriage license. Right? There's no litigation. Like, it's just a clerk who's like, you ask for it and they give it to you, but it's for records and keep. Right, you have to go through them. Sometimes you need courts, like in a divorce in America, you need a court to prove that, like, they decide whether the divorce is valid, right? Like, they get, like, is there a reason for, depends on the law, but is there a valid reason for getting divorced? Like, are the assets distributed properly? So you might even say that the Karim Yonasan's point here is that, like, the Kadam Bei Dina is not just for a Maisa Beis Din to approve or rubber stamp, but even to determine whether it's like every divorce is a type of litigation. Right? Is it halakhically justified? Okay. That's a really great point. Okay. Let me make a few other diukim in the psukim here to pull out some of the other themes. They're central in the Gemara. So what else do we have here? So Romy, bring us back. So we have 3 points so far, right? Just the concept, that the idea that Gerushin is feasible, the idea that it has to be Bishar, right? And the Targum Yonasan's point that maybe there's this requirement of Bezin, that's not really in the Psukim, but Targum Yonasan has it there. What else does the Psukim take a stance on? Ezra?
The nature of it.
So what does that mean then? What do you mean by the nature of it?
That it's not some technical bureaucratic status change. And it's also, I don't remember who it was that talked about why Greek is called Greek. It's not just some technical bureaucratic status change. It's an actual, like, these people have to be separated.
Okay, so you're a little ahead of me. I see what you're getting at. They have to be separated.
What were you going to say? Were you going to say what Ezra said?
I was going to say that it's taking the point in terms of how much is a subjective reason versus an objective reason.
Okay, but even before you start defining what type of reason, but there's a chiddush before that.
That there has to be a reason in the first place.
Yeah, there has to be a reason, right? The psukim themselves seems to indicate that there has to be some justification for the divorce, right? That's not obvious. Right, in America, you know, you have this idea of a no-fault divorce, right? Because that can be justified. You want to get divorced. The second here seemed to indicate that the divorce has to be justified. Maybe this gets back to David's point about the Kadam Bei Dina, right? Maybe you need a tribunal to determine whether it's justified. But the second seemed to suggest that there has to be some justification for it. Otherwise, what? It's not clear from the psukim. The Gemara approaches this question in the last daf, right? The Gemara is not sure. Let's say you can't provide the requisite justification. What happens then?
Seems to say the divorce ends.
Yes, yeah, so the Gemara wants to know: is it ma'akev the gerushin, or is it just an iser?
It seems to
say the divorce stands, you know? Maybe yeah. Those two were two
things. Like Marathi and the Masakta seems to say the divorce stands. But there might be it might be wrongful, right? Like you violate some sort of prohibition for getting divorced without the proper justification. And the second is less clear, so we'll come to the Gemara shortly. What do you make of the psukim requiring justification? Now we know from the Mishnah that we'll look at, we have three views of what justification suffices.
What are the three views? Daniel?
Yeah. Face Hillel.
Right. Also,
Ikticha Tavshila.
Right.
So we'll talk about those things. Now those are different levels of justification, right? I think Beishana is like a real justification. Rabbi Akiva, I assume, is the most minimal justification, unless you think that Beis Hillel. Well, I don't know. Intuitions might differ about which is a stronger justification. Is it Ikticha Tavshilo justifies divorce or Matzah Cheres Na'ar Mena? Right, it's not. Intuitions could differ about that. Let's just assume for now that Rabbi Akiva is generally seen as requiring the most minimal justification, correct? Many of you are married, someone's married, they find a spouse that they think is better suited for them. That's a reason to divorce your present spouse. Right? So, that's very relevant to giving content to this requirement for justification. But even Rabbi Akiva, who we'll assume is the most minimal justification, requires some sort of justification. Right? Like, you don't find Rabbi Akiva saying, I don't know, I guess it's a question of interpreting. According to Rabbi Akiva, if I want to get divorced because my wife is not on board for my purchasing addiction, shopping addiction. So is that justify Gershon? No, you're right. So my point is that even if you go to Rabbi Akiva land, it doesn't imply that no justification, that Rabbi Akiva is not a non-justification. It's a justification. And in fact, why might Rabbi Akiva be a justification? Something we'll see in one of my favorite Rishonim. Zecharia, we're going to get Zecharia hooked off the Rabbah, hooked onto the Abar Meno. They're similar thinkers sometimes. We'll see the Abar Meno has a very interesting view about this. But why might not Matzah Isha Acheres Na'amena be a good justification?
I mean, almost even like to protect the woman, that would be like a bad marriage.
So you're drinking the Kool-Aid from what was said in the base medrash.
Oh, am I? Oh, I don't know. I must have stopped listening to nothing.
Infiltrate its way into your mind, right? That's a view you could have, right? You could say that Rekiva is trying to say, this isn't it.
It's a bad marriage.
It's not clear to me that that's a bad marriage. So, was the idea presented in the base marriage that if Matzah Isha Acheres Na'amena, that means like your marriage is a bad marriage?
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what he was saying.
It's a big finish.
No. I think it's a sim on that. Like,
a house marriage.
Well, it's a sim on that, like, you know, like.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I don't want to pop anybody's like romantic fantasies, right? But you might say it's one thing to say that you love your spouse and you have a very caring and wonderful relationship. It's something else to say that there's no one else in the world, right, with whom I could have as good or better relationship. Again, maybe the idea is that that's the perspective somebody's supposed to have. I'm just saying that's a very strong view. I wouldn't, if you were a marriage counselor, I wouldn't go around saying, I wouldn't counsel people as practical advice that Matzah Acheres Na'amena, then your marriage makes no sense. Right? Maybe that was the view that was discussed. I don't think it's standard. I'm saying be mindful of what that entails. So, how would you make sense of Rabbi Akiva's Matzah Acheres Na'amena if you don't go in for Josh's view, Rami?
Because
going to speak that we should all like let go of the high bar. You know, like it's about a relationship. People want to be in it. They want to be in it. They don't have to be in it.
So that's, I think that's like saying there's Rabbi Akiva requires no justification. I'm wondering, is there a way to say Rabbi Akiva requires a significant justification? Right, but Matzahayas Naimana is a good justification in a way that saying, well, my wife is not supportive of my shopping addiction, so I want to leave her. But that's not a good justification. Right?
We're talking about cases where there's polygamy.
It's difficult to say that because the Torah allows, right? The Torah allows polygamy from the husband's side.
Because then, I am not.
Add on, you're saying.
Just, yeah.
I think you have to say, like, the Gemara already itself says at a certain point that a person can't support so many spouses. All right, so let's just say, like, for whatever reason, this person can only be married to one woman outside. So that would solve the problem. I don't think Rikido's seeing it. Yeah,
you know. Is that like the assumption, though, like in the Torah that the average person can only support one?
The Gemara assumes four, I think. I think the Gemara in Yavama says four.
So then, why would the Torah be like talking about, or I mean, why would Rabbi Akiva be like talking about like?
I think everyone's talking about.
Like, why does Rabbi Akiva say Matzah Yishah Chayav Nine Men? Why is that?
Yeah, that only would apply to that one like weird person who can only take one step.
Right. Saying why? I don't know how. Even if the Torah allows that, I don't know how common or accepted it was. I don't know. I have to think about it more. But, yes, the Akiva. You think, why, according to the Akiva, why can't you just marry both? That's the question.
Like, you can have first best person before you marry second best person.
Right. You could have a person good. They have to choose. It is a bit of a problem. I imagine you just have to assume the conditions are such that. You couldn't marry both. Not because like chiyuv and rabbi negation reasons, but because either support reasons or even just like, I think even in the times of Gemara it was considered extraordinary to have multiple spouses. Does anybody know anything about this? In your Stephen Fine research, what did...
Never spoke Fine.
Well, alright, so I'm giving you a job to... I'm sure, I'm linking my shliach. You'll find out for us and you'll get back to us. Or we can invite either that, or we can invite him to the shiur to give a presentation about it. Added incentive for you to ask. Yeah, Benji.
I have just a question. Does this imply that like you have to marry this woman, or what if a woman doesn't want to marry you? Well, like for Rabbi Akiva.
I think if the woman doesn't want to marry you,
is there still enough justification to divorce her? I'm saying, is it like a beyond your current relationship?
Right.
Is someone that like.
I see what you're saying. It's a very lumdish. You're making a very lumdish point. This is the nafkamina between what Josh was saying and what I'm suggesting. Lefi Josh, it has nothing to do with whether this woman is willing to marry you. It's all just assuming that your first marriage is bad.
Or it could even be that.
On Josh's view, right?
Yeah, right. Even if then, if you know, if you could support two wives, then sure, you know, you can marry the other woman also.
Right, but according to Josh, it makes sense because...
This first one is
a bad marriage. Okay. It's a big chiddush. I would just say, when we look at the Abarbanel, I hadn't thrown the source yet, the Abarbanel says that, I think he quotes Aristotle or something, that look, we all know that marriage is like supposed to achieve all these results for a person. Okay, well, we'll look at what he thinks it achieves, but whether it's... The Gemara itself has statements along those lines in Yavamos, right? You have a partner, you have... whatever, the Gemara has some views about this. Whatever it is, we'll talk about that when we get there. The Abarbanel says, like, that vision... Like, the Torah doesn't want to bar you from achieving the good things of marriage... that can be achieved in a better way, in a better union. So it's like the opposite of Josh's point.
It's a secret.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, here's marriage. Like, marriage can do all these wonderful things.
So you have to divorce your current life.
Right, so if you're... Yeah, so Matzah Yishah Chayav Shnayim Men, it's like, you could realize the beauty of marriage in this new union.
Right, so if you hold like that, then if... what's it called?
So then, yes, you're not
if you want to marry you, then it's also for you to get divorced.
Arguably, right. The point I want to make two of. Did everybody get the gist of the environmental suggestion? Yes? Sorry? Yeah. So I want to make two observations about it. Number one, and then I'll stop for a mincha. Number one is that, notice that's a real justification, right? According to this, Rabbi Akiva is saying, look, marriage is supposed to accomplish like all these things. If you're not accomplishing them in your present union, even if your spouse is a wonderful person, then you should move on to like realize the Torah's vision of a good marriage, right? Or a better marriage, maybe. Maybe it's not like some threshold, but like if it could always be better, then you should always be moving towards like better unions. Yeah? Now, notice there's the second point. So the first point is that's a real justification, right? It's not that Matzah Yishav Keres Na'ah Imenu is a frivolous type of desire that somebody has. But it's to actually realize this brought this more romanticized conception of what marriage could be. Everybody see that? Okay, so it's a real justification. Why does that rub us all the wrong way? It doesn't rub you the wrong way, then.
Of course it does.
Of course it does? Okay, why does it rub us? Okay, because you hear about how Trump, he's on his third wife, you say, oh, the guy's, you say he's a minoga.
Do I say that?
I don't know. I wouldn't say that. No, I would say that. So why does that rub you the wrong way? I think because you say, that's crazy. You married somebody, you made a commitment to them. Whereas Kishli La'olam, like Kedushin is, you know, just says it's forever. So how could you just betray that person and move on to somebody else, right? It's like where's the loyalty? Where's the commitment? No? Does that resonate with you guys? So I just want to point out the conflicting intuitions here between the Abarbanel's view and the intuition that probably most of us hold is between something about the institution of marriage, like what could marriage achieve, and the individual persons that are bonded by it. At the Rav Hanel, you're saying, look what marriage could achieve. You're not achieving it in your first union. Who cares about the kind of the victim, this first spouse? Like, realize the conception of marriage. And then the counterintuition that many of us has, like, wait a second, like, where's the Via Hafla Rafa Kamofa? Like, what about the person that you're committed to in the first union? So that's a very important tension that I want to come back to. And I want to think even more deeply about the relationship between those two dimensions, like the institution of marriage versus sometimes the, like what's a din in the marriage and what's a din in the v'ahavta l'recha kamocha v'an l'chaveru of the two persons bonded by marriage. All right, it's 2:30, let's stop here. Well, that'll mention the classroom, right? Okay. And we'll meet tomorrow for sure. I might push it a little bit later tomorrow, like maybe we'll start at 11:15. Have to be up.
Yeah,
why?
Somebody
want to come? If you want to come to Chalitza, maybe just.
No, we should come to the deck. Is it here?
I'll say two things. Part of the LCH might leave the open. If somebody wants to come to Gittin or serve as an aide on Gittin, you can come to the Bezin sometimes. I think it's great to see
an actual.
Yeah, this is great. It's pretty rare. At least it's very rare, but if you want to come to the police, I could probably connect you tomorrow. But get in any time, you could. So bear that in mind. All right, let's stop here and we'll dive in front and all.